It is gone! A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! Pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 266. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. We got a lot to get to on this episode of the podcast. We finally got our first glimpse of Bryce Harper in a Phillies uniform in a game. It's the unofficial start to his career, and it was a lot of fun, even if the game itself, after Bryce Harper, and really all the other parts except Bryce Harper, it was really a boring, awful baseball game. But we're going to get into Bryce Harper's first action. We're going to get into the Phillies' starting rotation depth. We'll talk about some of the injuries, some updates on what players are doing with injuries. Talk about the infield depth, all-star team stuff, Gabe Kapler. Lots to get to here on the podcast. And joining me, as he does every Sunday night, is the head guy at The Good Fight, Justin Clue. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Liz has the night off tonight, so it'll be just Justin and I, like it has been back in the past. And we were talking beforehand, nothing better than spending a Sunday night with another dude. So, Justin, good to talk to you again, buddy. How you doing?
Good to talk to you, John. Yes, another productive weekend. Adam Jones has a job now.
Yeah, good for Adam.
Good-ish news. Yeah, the type of deal is just as big a disappointment as most deals you've seen players get, the real, Yasmani Grandal kind of, why is he taking that deal kind of deal? But yeah,
one year, $3 million with the Diamondbacks. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. And he's somebody I've written about or talked about sort of in the background this off season. And he's somebody who I think would have been jived well with the Phillies. They, as we all know, tried to acquire him last season, but he used his 10-5 rights to deny the trade, which is a sweet move. I can't believe we don't see more players do that. They went for McCutcheon instead of Jones on the veteran fourth outfielder market this winter. So it's good to see him end up somewhere. He was definitely going to end up somewhere, but I don't know. It just closes the loop on that little background narrative to the offseason when our focus has been elsewhere. But Adam Jones has been a favorite guy of mine to watch. And, it's good he's got another year at least of baseball in him, but hopefully things shake out a little better for him after this season. If he's still trying to play, he can get a deal that's more worthy of his talents and contributions in the clubhouse.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy the Phillies were looking at the trade deadline last season, but he wanted to stay in Baltimore and finish off his contract there because he is just really important to that city and was such a big part of that locker room and a big part of that team. But I'm not sure how much playing time he's going to get in Arizona. He might be kind of a fourth outfielder type guy. That might be where he is in his career right now, but he is just a great guy to have on a team. He's kind of like Andrew McCutcheon in that way. I think McCutcheon's more talented, still has a few more years in front of him where he could be a really productive starting outfielder. Jones, I think, could still be that guy, but he doesn't quite have McCutcheon's on-base skills. But nevertheless, Adam Jones, a good baseball player, and had the Phillies not gotten Bryce Harper, he could be on the Phillies right now. I would not be at all surprised if that was plan B or plan C if they didn't get Harper when all came to. But they did get Bryce Harper, and let's not even talk
about a potential universe where that did not happen. Let's just gloss
damn
over
straight.
That.
Damn straight. Let's talk about Bryce Harper, and we finally got our first glimpse of him playing real baseball. No more live BP, no more of the batting practice videos. We actually saw him on our television screens on Saturday afternoon playing against the Blue Jays. Two at-bats for Bryce Harper, two walks. We're going to see that a lot this season. He's a guy who knows how to get on base. Justin, the music he came up to the plate was with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Now, you could take that one of two ways. One, that, in the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Will Smith actually leaves Philadelphia for Los Angeles, which, again, I don't, just something to think about. But I think the main thing is he wanted to kind of further ingratiate himself into the hearts of the Philly faithful. And what better way to do that than with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme music? Anyway, what was your reaction seeing Bryce Harper in a Phillies uniform for the first time? He's going to play, I think we're going to see him another three times this week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So just the first of a number of games this week, we'll get to see Bryce Harper on the field in a Phil's uniform.
Yeah, I think it went about as well as realistic expectations would have dictated. You know, obviously the dream scenario is he hits a home run, and it pleases that sellout crowd at Spectrum Field right from the get-go. But I think you're right. I mean, he only Mike Trout walked more than him last year or something. Did I read that? So
yeah.
So it makes sense that in both at bats he walked. He's going to get on base, and that's how it's supposed to work. This is a lineup people should be excited about. There's not a lot you have to make work anymore. It's all largely guys who you should be able to expect more output from. You shouldn't be thinking like, well, if this happens, if the wind is right, if he makes this adjustment, you've just got that Harper, Hoskins, Realmuto block that really it gives you multiple power and on base threats. And if one of them is pressing, then maybe another one will pick them up. And, you know, I do think that I am drawing a lot of conclusions from two preseason Bryce Harper walks, but I do think it is an indication of the greater picture to an extent. And it just got me more excited about seeing that, like, yeah, maybe they give him nothing to pitch, but this isn't a Phillies lineup, or nothing to hit. But this is a Phillies lineup where there's more than one threat in it. So you can't just avoid Bryce Harper, because as Reese Hoskins right. showed them in the next at bat, when he hit that disaster of a home run just absolutely Ooh. Out of the stadium, that kind of yep. proved the point. Like, that's how this offense is going to work. I think we're going to see it was a great little preview of what should be a more productive offense. I mean, the sound of that ball off Hoskins' bat, I mean, it's like a warning shot to the National League that this is going to hurt.
Yeah.
And I think like the very for some reason, very talked about anecdote following the home run of Bryce Harper saying, get used to that, and Reese Hoskins laughing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's cheesy. And like with the Fresh Prince theme song, very cheesy, obvious choice. But like, he's trying to endear himself to fans and fully embrace being in a new city. And that's great. You know, that's very cool. And seeing the offense function even as a microcosm of what we could expect in the coming year, it's awesome. That's what we were watching for, you know?
Yeah, no, and it was just great to see him out there. I mean, after the buildup, it still didn't seem quite real that Bryce Harper was taking swings for the Phillies, you know? And it's going to be so much fun to see a real true superstar wearing a Phillies uniform night in and night out. And I can't wait to see more of him this week. I can't wait to see him in right field. He's going to be in the field on Monday, so getting some time, some action in the field. And, you know, it'd have been great to see him get more than two at-bats. But, yeah, and you see what effect he has on the lineup, because it does, having that left-handed bat in the middle of that lineup after, and I love the order. I love McCutchen at the top of the order. I love Segura at number two. I love Harper at three with Hoskins at four and Realmuto five. You know, that's four right-handers among the top five in your lineup, but they all get on base. They all do pretty well against right-handed pitching. But having Bryce, that left-handed power guy in the middle of that lineup, really does make a huge difference. And I think, like you said, if you pitch around Bryce Harper, Reese Hoskins will beat you. I think we could see Reese Hoskins have a better season than maybe we're expecting because of the effect of Bryce Harper. And, you know, if they want to pitch around Hoskins too, okay, well then you got to pitch to JT Realmuto. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Odubel Herrera doesn't suck. I know he had a terrible year last year, but if he's your six-hole hitter, Odubel Herrera could see a lot of fastballs this year. You know, I think that's something to think about as well. So that's
I feel like I've been repeating this point lately, that the acquisition of these superstars really takes the pressure off of a couple of young hitters who definitely felt pressure yeah. the past couple of years. And, you know, maybe they were they still had some adjustments to make. Maybe they were, especially in the case of Michael Franco, the plate discipline wasn't there. But man, not having the scrutiny on them at all times, that like you got to be the centerpiece of this team, that I think could work wonders. And somebody like at the top of that list, Reese Hoskins and Odubel Herrera are two guys that, without as much pressure being forced upon them, if they're staying healthy, those are two guys that I expect to see a lot more from in 2019.
No, for sure. And because we've seen them, they had to carry this offense in years past. Last year, the only time the offense really ran is when Hoskins and Herrera were both hot at the same time. And it happened at the beginning mm-hmm. of the season. And there was another stretch in the middle of the season where they both picked it up. I think it was right after Reese Hoskins came back from felling a ball off his face. And he mm-hmm. got really hot for that month in June. I think Odubel Herrera picked it up a little bit at that point, too. And we saw the offense. It just lifted everybody. Well, now you don't, like you said, you don't have to have those guys be the whole offense. I mean, you can have, having Gene Segura in the number two hole, being able to hit the ball into the right field hole, get you some first and thirds. And I think maybe against some right-handed pitchers, you might see Cesar Hernandez in the leadoff spot because he does have that. He does have on-base skills. And then you could move McCutchen a little bit further down in the lineup and maybe get him to be an RBI guy. The thing is, this lineup, there's flexibility with all of these different guys too. You with the first two spots in the order, and then spots 6, 7, 8, and if you want to hit the pitcher 8, 6, 7, 9, whatever Gabe Kapler happens to do, and he's not going to have the same lineup every night, and that's fine. But I do believe it's going to be most of the same guys every night, and their flexibility in moving them, being able to move around the lineup, is going to give the Phillies a lot of different looks. But what you have now is a 3-4-5. That really should scare people. It should scare opposing pitchers. It should scare opposing managers. Managers are going to have to game plan for the middle of this lineup. The Phillies have not had a true middle of the lineup since 2012, I guess, the year after they won 102 games, when they still had Utley and Howard and, you know, I guess, you know, did they even have three at that point? Pence was there in 2011. He was there for the first part of 2012. And I guess after that, that's when they really lost the 3-4-5.
Yeah, so, that was the acquisition of Pence was viewed almost to comically that he was there to protect Howard. And yeah. I think in like one of his first couple of games, Howard was seeing more pitches that he could swing at and like hitting home runs again. And that like became the joke of it, that that's what, you know, Pence is there to protect Ryan Howard. And yeah, I love that this isn't a lineup where you can avoid the trouble. There's not like, if you want to pitch around the threats in this Phillies lineup, ideally you're pitching around eight different guys. Like right. Any one of these guys is at least impactful, even down to like Cesar Hernandez. It's like, yeah, we've also seen him play really well. If you took the best month of each of these players, like each of them has had more than a month stretch where they've looked really, really good over the past, mm-hmm. like at some point in the past couple of years. Obviously, in Bryce Harper's case, those periods have been much more extended. In the cases of somebody like Franco or Hernandez, it's like, yeah, they were really effective for 3-4 months or for one whole season, but never like too much prolonged success in a row. But if you took the ceiling of each of those guys and like lined them all up next to each other, if they were all hitting it, or like six or five or six of them are all at their ceilings at the same time, that is a really threatening lineup. And like this middle block, it all, that's like the beating heart, you know, that's where it starts. And right. Just seeing hints of that with Harper getting the hit is like, yeah, this is a lineup that could really, really do some damage.
Well, even at the bottom of the order with guys like Michael Franco, who's either going to hit 7 mm-hmm. or 8 this year. The reason Michael Franco does so well in spring training every year is because he just sees a steady diet of fastballs. You get him to the regular season, you start throwing those breaking pitches on the outside part of the plate. Those are the pitches he rolls over or pops up. If they're at a point where they have to throw him fastballs this year, he's going to hit some home runs. He's going to have more consistency because he doesn't strike out. Michael Franco's not a strikeout guy, never has been. He makes a ton of contact. The problem is he makes a lot of weak contact because he has trouble with breaking pitches from right-handed pitchers. And he's still going to see some of that. But if the guys in front of him are getting on base, and the same goes for Herrera, he could get hits. He could hit 25 to, you know, 28 home runs this year. Maybe he could hit 30 home runs if he gets enough plate appearances. I don't know how many plate appearances Franco is going to get this year. And we're going to talk about kind of the infield depth in a few minutes and talk about what's there a little bit. But right now, I do think that the Phillies eight starters that we assume, which is, you know, Hernandez at second, Segura at shortstop, Franco at third, Hoskins first, and you got your three outfielders, McCutchen, Harper, and Herrera, and Realmuto. Those are going to be your guys. You know, Nick Williams mm-hmm. might get the, if Nick Williams is still on the team. And I know a lot of people kind of wanted us to talk about what the Phillies are going to do with the outfield situation. That's a big issue right now. You guys talked about that on the latest edition of Continued Success that just came out. And I talked about the outfield on a recent Hitting Season. So go back and check out those episodes for a little bit more talk about the outfield. But they're going to have to do something with Nick Williams or Aaron Altherr or Roman Quinn at some point here in the next little while. Nick Williams is the only one who has options. But if Nick Williams is still on the team, you might see him substitute for Andrew McCutchen against a tough right-hander here and there. Still kind of, that's all got to play out. And that's going to be what a lot of the next month of spring training, actually it's not a month anymore, it's just a couple of weeks of spring training left, that they're going to have to work all that kind of stuff out. But one other question, though, is somebody asked if you think that maybe we could see Odubel Herrera in the leadoff spot. I think Odubel Herrera was at his best on this team when he was in the leadoff spot. And I think they have better options at the leadoff spot. So my reaction is no, I don't think he's going to hit leadoff all that often. But it's an interesting question. If you could hit Odubel leadoff and you had a reasonable sense that he would do well there, I do think that is a spot in the order that he likes. And I think that's a spot in the order where last year's first month of the season aside, that he has actually performed best in. What are your thoughts on Herrera at the top of the lineup?
Odubel Herrera is a 289 hitter when he hits in the leadoff spot. So like that's to question whether or not he could is great, because you're right.
Do you have his on base percentage in front of you when he hits in the leadoff spot? If not, I'll look it up. You had the batting average. I didn't know if you had the on base.
Yeah, 343.
Yeah, see, it's not quite as good as Cesar Hernandez.
When you say there are better options, there are better options. However, that doesn't mean he's not an option.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree. I think that's another. And, you know, this lineup has some sneaky maneuverability to it, which I think that was part of its appeal. Like seeing this, part of the reason we were excited was to see, like, oh, people have jobs again. This is great. We know who to expect, who to expect to play what position. We don't have to wait for like the clown car to unload every time the game is starting. But at the same time, you know, this gives Gabe Kapler the real estate to make the chess moves he wants to make. And I think Odubel Herrera could be a part of that, because he's somebody who has moved around the Phillies batting order in the past couple of years, and he's seen some success at batting first, certainly. But that's what's good. This team is missing some depth right now in the infield. However, to have three different guys who could theoretically bat in the leadoff spot as a productive on-base hitter, that's another value this lineup has. Like something to look forward to.
I'm trying to think who would be, I mean, so you have, let's talk about the infield depth a little bit, because it is a little bit of a question mark. You do have your starting infield, but we all know what that infield is right now. And the Phillies last year went with a 4-man bench, which I wasn't happy with. I think they should have a 5-man bench and a smaller bullpen, but I don't think Gabe Kapler is going to change. I think he's going to go with a 4-man bench. And Scott Kingery obviously will be the primary backup at most of those infield positions, whether or not we like him at shortstop or third base or not. I think that's the Phillies' plan, is to have him be that backup super utility guy in the infield. But I wonder who is Rhys Hoskins' backup at first base. I guess if Andrew Knapp is probably going to be the backup catcher, and I guess he'd be the backup first baseman too, which, you know, you'd like to have a little bit better of an option there, but you know, they're spending a lot of money on some of these other spots, so maybe you just bite the bullet. I feel like you got to have two outfielders and Scott Kingery, and Andrew Knapp, I guess, is the backup catcher, backup first baseman. Is that how you see it at the moment too?
I mean, that's got to be it, because if this team wants to limit its bench, then they're not going to have a space for Mitch Walding to hang around, frankly. Like as great a story it would be, he's not someone who has shown that he's ready to have even a small role on a big league team. So, it's got to be now. I mean, maybe find a way to put Franco at first base. I don't know. The Phillies would have
I think you're right. I think that could be a plan. Yeah. Franco at first base. Yeah.
I think, you just have to get creative. If you have a 4-man bench and, you know, chaos happens and Ryan Howard gets thrown out of the game by Scott Barry, and suddenly you got to put, you know, a pitcher in the outfield and an outfielder first base, you know, that could happen. And when you run with a small bench, that's an issue you're going to have to face somewhere down the line. Like something unexpected is going to happen. So I think, you either got to move Knapp down there, you got to move Franco in there. I mean, it kind of tells you it's in a good way. You know, we were worried at one point that Rhys Hoskins was never going to play first base, his natural position, ever again. Now it seems like, all right, if he's not, then I guess nobody is.
Yeah, you can never not play first base ever again. Here's one crazy idea, and I have no idea if it's viable. The guys who follow the minor league prospects more closely than I do would probably know this better. But I wonder if Dylan Cousins could play first base. Not at the start of the season. I think he would have to start in the minor leagues and, you know, learn how to play first base. He's mostly an outfielder. I don't know how good an outfielder he is defensively, but he's such a big, bulky dude with that left-handed power. He would struggle against left-handed pitching like crazy, for sure. He's having a good spring so far, but again, how much does that really mean? Spring training numbers and spring training performance, generally speaking, is not truly indicative of what's to come that season. Or in anybody's career, as we saw from Franco and Kingery last year. But if I'm thinking of like a power-hitting left-handed hitter off the bench, somebody to sub out Rhys Hoskins against maybe some really tough right-handers, or maybe just, you know, to give Rhys Hoskins a day off. I don't want him playing 162 games. You know, maybe you give Rhys Hoskins a day off here against a right-hander. I would think Dylan Cousins could learn first base and maybe be that backup guy at first, because he could also back up in the outfield as well. He could be a guy you could play at either spot. The question would be whether or not he's good enough to hit major league pitching, and we just don't know that yet. We need to see him probably perform well in AAA for a couple of months to run with that plan. But if I'm the Phillies, I'm getting him some practice at first base in Lehigh Valley this year just to see if he can do that and progress against AAA pitching. Because if he can hit well against AAA pitching and learn first base a little bit, that would make him a versatile guy, a potential left-handed power bat off the bench that I think could help, but I don't think we're quite there yet. I just wonder if it's possible.
Yeah, I think it's totally possible. It took me a second to realize as you were talking that, oh, right, Dylan Cousins is not technically a first baseman. He's listed as an outfielder. I don't think that would be that unnatural of a transition at all. In fact, they worked him out at first base last September. Like, it was the middle of the month, so it was like, you know, a guy is taking defensive, this guy's taking grounders at first base in the middle of September when the team's out of a playoff race. Not exactly headline news, certainly, but he did. They tried him out there because it seems inevitable. You know, like he's the kind of player who could be like a backup first baseman, a pinch hitter, power threat off the bench. I think you're absolutely right. He's just, like you said, he just hasn't shown that he's good enough. You know, like he struck out a ton. He went 2 for 22 with 16 strikeouts when he got called up to the major league. So, you know, it's not a ton of time to measure him by, but at the same time, yeah, like you only need to see so much of a guy to know that, okay, but he's not even at like that first threshold yet where he's keeping up with major league pitching totally. That being said, if we're talking about a much more effective Dylan Cousins who has a little more major league experience or a little more AAA experience under his belt before you bring him up, then that sounds like a great idea. If he puts up the numbers, it would be very cool to see Dylan Cousins have a role of some significance on this team, and to make him a little more versatile makes him a part of a four-man bench, I think, a little more naturally, because you can't have somebody on a four-man bench whose sole job is backing up first base, I would imagine. You got to have at least some other role for this person to be filling. So, yeah, that would be a very pure power threat off the bench late, and that would be great because a couple of these other guys that there's still a bunch of question marks floating around. We've talked about the sneaky power of an Aaron Altair or even a Roman Quinn on occasion, but that's not power you can necessarily rely on. If you have Dylan Cousins in your arsenal, then that's a blunt force weapon that you want to just go to and know what you can expect from it. That's like a Matt Stairs kind of like, all right, get up there and, you know, swing as hard as you can. So that would be a very cool, I think, closing the loop on the Dylan Cousins narrative, at least this spring, because you're right. He's looked great. He's mashed three taters so far this spring, and they have not been quiet, and they have been very, very much in the next zip code when they've landed. So yeah, that would be great to see. But like you said, I think he's got to put up the numbers first.
Well, good stuff from Bryce Harper in this first game. We're looking forward to seeing him back out on the field the next three games this week. And we also got a couple of updates on some injured Phillies. Cesar Hernandez, Odubel Herrera took ground balls on Sunday morning. Gabe Kapler said he was encouraged by the progress. Both could play in games within the next 5 to 10 days. That's good. This report by Comcast Sports. I keep wanting to call it Comcast Sports. NBC Sports Philly said Roman Quinn has
Prism. It's Prism.
It's Prism. Yeah,
that's what you're thinking of.
I miss Prism. Prism was great. He said it's less likely we're going to see Quinn soon. The injury might keep him off the opening day roster, which again is just brutal news for Quinn. Hopefully he's able to get this oblique thing fixed as quickly as possible. I know he said he talked to Brian Dawkins. Brian Dawkins gave a speech to the team before Bryce Harper's before the Bryce Harper game on Saturday, and he said he talked to Roman Quinn a little bit. Quinn asked, talked to him about how to stay healthy and things he could do to help keep himself healthy. So we'll see if anything comes from that. Quinn just can't keep himself on the straight and narrow with his health. And Tommy Hunter, who's out with a strained flexor muscle in his throwing arm, played catch on Sunday. He's on a throwing program, but he's probably not going to be ready for opening day either. So coming up, let's talk a little bit about the starting rotation depth. Who's impressed so far down in spring training? Again, understanding that spring training performance is not necessarily indicative of anything, but again, starting rotation is a little bit of a question mark, and the Phillies have a little bit of depth at AAA. So we'll get into that a little bit up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So, Justin, let's get into the starting rotation a little bit. And we're not going to talk about Dallas Keuchel on this episode. We've talked about Keuchel a lot in recent podcasts. I think everybody knows that we would both welcome Keuchel on a 2 or a 3-year deal. Again, my preference would be like a 2-year deal with a vesting option for a third. I would imagine that'd probably be your preference too. Keuchel, 2 years, a third year vesting. Would you go 3 guaranteed?
I would be much more comfortable too with a third vesting. Yeah. We're together on that.
Yeah. But it'd be nice to have a lefty in the middle of the line, in the middle of the rotation. And I think he still has something left in the tank, but let's just assume that they don't go down that road. And I think it's probably more likely than not that
this
they
sounds an awful lot like we're talking about Dallas Keuchel, John.
We're getting off right now. We're getting off the Keuchel train right now. Sounds more likely than not that they won't. So let's talk about the starting rotation depth. And, you know, when we look at Nola, we know Nola's going to be great. He struck out a bunch of hitters in the game on Sunday, gave up a couple of runs here and there. But again, these guys are all working on things down in the spring. They're not bringing their A-level intensity. We've seen a couple of outings from Jake Arrieta where the stuff looked like it was really good, had a lot of velocity, gave up some runs in the Bryce Harper game on Saturday. But I think you have to be encouraged by the velocity. What Arrieta's deal is he needs to control his stuff. He needs to have command. When he was great in 2015 and 2016, he had command of everything, and he could put the ball where he wanted to, and he was unhittable when he was doing that. His problem last year was that he just missed the zone too much, and whether that was because of the shift playing behind him messing with him or the knee injury that he suffered in midseason, him being able to harness his stuff, which still has great movement and good velocity here in the spring, is key for him. And Pivetta has been throwing super hard here in the spring, Justin. He's like consistently throwing 96, 97, 98. And I don't know if the Trackmaster is hot or the gun is hot that they're using to measure speed of these pitches, but if Pivetta really is throwing this hard, it's harder than we've seen him throw, and puts him up there with DeGrom and Syndergaard as far as velocity is concerned.
Oh,
so
Lord.
That would be, yeah. Now you're really talking about a potential Nick Pivetta breakout season. Velasquez has not looked great so far this spring. Again, not terribly worried about that. And you've got Zach Eflin, who has looked okay here in the spring so far. What are your thoughts on the pitching depth right now? Like if you had to put your money on one guy to kind of not step up here in 2019 and for the Phillies to need to look to replace one of these five guys, which of the five do you think it would be? I mean, wouldn't be Nola. So I guess which of the four after Nola would do you think it would be? For me, it's Eflin.
Oh, you're killing me. All right. So I just was talking up this guy on another podcast saying I've just always loved Vince Velasquez's raw stuff. I think there's just so much going on in there that if he could just learn to harness a little more and not throw so many pitches in the first three innings of a start, that he could be such a powerful addition to the back of a rotation. And he's just we've just never seen him take full control of his velocity the way he's going to have to stay in this rotation. And frankly, I mean, after talking about how big this season should be for him and will be for him, whether he steps up to it or not, he's kind of the only one who's been genuinely discouraging so far in his appearances. He's really, I think he's just, has he just had the one start that, and it went pretty poorly. He lasted one, I think he got like one.
I think he said, I think he's had two starts this spring. But yeah, I'm not sure about that. Because we haven't been able to see. It's only some of the games have been on TV, so I haven't been able to keep total track.
They've been keeping him to pretty abbreviated starts, and not just him. All these guys that we're talking about. And you said Zach Eflin's looked okay. I mean, Zach Eflin's appeared in two different games. He's allowed one run, you know, in 5 2/3 innings. He has five strikeouts. And
that's good.
If you count ERA over that such a short sample size, he's at 1.59. Like, he's looked solid. He's looked effective. He's looked, unfortunately, better to me than Vince Velasquez. I mean, we've seen Jake Arrieta come out and show some encouraging signs. And he's just at a point, and Arrieta's at a point in his career where he just has to show that he's going to be, he can get guys out, and he's got a job in this rotation. Like, I don't think Arrieta, despite being a disappointing member of the rotation last year, is in any real danger of losing his job. When we talk about new additions to the rotation, we're generally talking about Eflin, Velasquez, and Pivetta. I think Pivetta, I believe the hype. I got sucked into that as well, that he's going to be one of the Phillies' bigger. I mean, I you're the first one to jump up to the DeGrom level I know you're not. I know you're not saying he will be. I knew you were going to jump in there. I know you're not saying it's going to be Jacob DeGrom.
Shut up. I'm not saying he's Jacob DeGrom. Just shut up with it.
I just heard those names next to each other. I'm just saying I'm into it. I think Nick Pivetta, this is his chance. This is a great year for him to rise above this mess that's been in the back of the Phillies rotation. Not a mess, just a ambiguity that's been at the back of the Phillies rotation for so long, and really show that he's a guy who deserves a spot on a big league rotation. Part of that is because he's throwing a changeup more. He threw it, like, well, I read, like 2% of the time last year, but already he's trying to utilize that pitch a little more. And for that reason, you know, that along with his fastball being in the high 90s, and like you said, touching Jacob DeGrom territory, well above the 94, 95 mile an hour fastball he was throwing last year. I mean, yeah, that's really encouraging to think that he's notching up the heat at the same time, learning to manipulate hitters with a changeup as well. That adds another dimension to his game, and that's something that could really make him much more of a weapon, and add even more to the "we got this guy from the Nationals for Jonathan Papelbon" subplot, which is such a great component to any sort of success Pivetta has. And you know, if Eflin keeps looking okay, I think I'm with you. I think Eflin and Velasquez are both the guys that are remaining somewhat precarious in their placement in this rotation. And frankly, so far this spring, Eflin, even in this little bit we've seen, and both of these guys getting two starts, Eflin has just had a better go of it. And Velasquez is just a guy for whom this is, again, just such, this is a big year. I mean, the Phillies aren't being super aggressive, other than chasing Corbin earlier in the offseason, about addressing this rotation. So I don't know. I mean, at this point, we're seeing less and less of the attachment to, you know, he who shall not be named, you know, the only remaining blockbuster member of the free agent class in the pitching market. So at this point, they've got the guys down there that I feel like they're still waiting to see something from. But at some point, you got to know that with as aggressively as they've upgraded this offense, eventually that same philosophy is going to be applied to the rotation, especially if they start the season and the offense is clicking, but the pitching is letting them down. That can't be a problem that they're just going to sit on for a while and think, all right, well, for the fourth year in a row, we'll see which one of these guys at the back of the rotation is going to step up. I mean, we've been saying for the past 5 years, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is what development looks like. This is what development looks like. We're kind of at the end of that, I think. Not developing, but just knowing what we're going to know about these players. We sort of have a book on the back of the rotation now, and I think you're going to start seeing some decisions get made, which would be great. So yeah, I think I'll just say Velasquez because you said Eflin, but either one of those guys, I think they're at the cusp of a pretty big season that's going to determine their fate, I think, with the Phillies.
No, I agree. And I agree with you, especially that this is Vinny Velasquez's season. That this is the season where he absolutely has to show something. And he had that 16 strikeout, one hitter against the Padres so long ago that most folks have forgotten about it. And he's the guy that really has frustrated Phillies fans the most over these last few years. I mean, you see the stuff, you see the talent, you think, man, this guy really should be able to do it. But, you know, I'm just not sure. Although I will say for a good part of last season, really until you get into September, he was quite good. He had a 4.05 ERA through September, but that gets thrown all out of whack by a 10-run outing that he had, where he had to wear it. Like the staff had gone through the bullpen. He pitched into the fourth inning and given up 10 earned runs in that game. He had a 3.82 ERA coming into that game. After that 10-run outing, he went from June 14th through August 26th. He had 13 starts with a, where's the ERA? Where is it? 3.06 ERA after that start. So in all of the starts, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He had 12 starts before the 10-run game and had a 3.82 ERA. And then you had that 10-run game. And then in the 12 starts after that, he had a 3.06 ERA. So this is a guy who for much of last season pitched really, really well. And people don't remember that. He was terrible in September. He had a hard time. I think he ran out of gas like so many of the young pitchers did last year. And I think that's what the Phillies believe too, that these guys ran out of gas at the end of last year. They all passed career highs in their innings. And so they had reached portions of their career as far as workload. They had reached out workload issues that they had never gotten to before. That being said, Vince Velasquez needs to take the step forward this year. He needs to be that guy who can pitch a little bit deeper. He did pitch deeper into games last year than he had in his previous seasons. I really felt like he took a step forward last year, which is why I'm encouraged, and I think he will be better this coming season. But I don't have a high degree of confidence in that. I really don't. And I do think that you could see this team go after a pitcher on the trade market. And we'll get into that in future podcasts. I don't want to already be talking about the trade market for this coming season. You know, we'll see what happens with this rotation over the next couple of months or so. But obviously the team will look to upgrade in the starting rotation before at the trade deadline if they need it. But I think, like I said, for me, Eflin is the guy who I just have never loved his stuff. I don't think he's got the same kind of stuff as Velasquez or Pivetta do, and that's why I think he would likely be the odd man out. And then as far as the AAA guys who would come in for depth, we've only seen a handful of these guys, and only for very short bursts. We've seen a little bit of Eniel De Los Santos, who looks like a better reliever to me than a starting pitcher. Ranger Suarez pitched a couple times last year for the Phillies, and again, didn't look overly impressive, but again, that's a very small sample size. So the guy that you hear a lot about, who's two guys really that have looked really good. Spencer Howard is, again, looks like a really good prospect, but is further away. Drew Anderson has looked good so far this spring in the little bit of time that he's been out there. And I think most people really like Jojo Romero as a left-hander who seems like he'll be ready to join the rotation this year or face big league hitters at some point if the need arises. And there's going to be a need because these guys are going to hit the DL. That's not called the DL anymore. I got to stop referring to the injured list. They're going to hit the injured list at different points this season, and you're going to need some of these guys. For me, Jojo Romero would be the first guy I would hope is called up. He's got to pitch well at AAA. Obviously, if he's struggling at AAA, they're not going to call him up. But Justin, he would be the first guy for me that I would want to see if they need to fill a couple of starts here and there with some of their AAA depth. I think he's the guy with the highest upside right now. How about you?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm being completely sucked into the Drew Anderson story. This is what you watch Grapefruit League baseball to see. Some guy, yeah. You've definitely heard his name a bunch of times in the past couple of years, but he's definitely like a AAA dweller who pops up on occasion because somebody's like arm jumps out of their socket and they got to go on the IL for a couple of weeks. And so Drew Anderson gets his big chance. You know, he's appeared in games for the Phillies in 2017 and 2018. His 2017 appearance, not great. Appeared in two
not
games
great.
Through 2 1/3 innings for a good enough for a 23.414 ERA.
Yow.
That's six Yikes. Earned runs and six hits in 2 1/3 innings. So, you know, you didn't expect a whole lot. You didn't really expect to hear his name again, really. And Drew Anderson, kind of a forgettable name on the baseball front anyway. 2018, he comes back, throws 12 2/3 innings for the Phillies at the major league level, appearing in five games. He got a start. He finished a game. He allowed seven earned runs and 17 hits, good enough for an ERA, just under five. Still, nothing that made you think, cool, this guy's still on the team. But now, I mean, after what we've seen in, you know, the preseason and every asterisk that you put on the stats you see that time of year. I mean, look, Drew Anderson's thrown 8 2/3 innings so far this spring. He's allowed one earned run. He's allowed 4 hits, one walk, and 11 strikeouts. I mean, that we're talking about it because it happened more than once. And you know, 2 is more than 1. You can't argue with that. It's still a very low number.
Wait. Let me think about it. I might argue. I mean, give me some time to think. 2, I think, is it always more than 1?
Hang on. We'll be right back after this. Yeah.
Yeah.
John and I are going to argue off mic about how big of a number 2 is. but yeah, no, that's I just want to be drawn in on this. These are the kind of stories that make preseason baseball worth watching. And Drew Anderson, who has never really shown a whole lot at the major league level, is still got plenty more to show at the major league level, but he's having a hell of a spring. And I'm sorry, he's appeared in 3 games. He's made 3 starts, but still 1.04 ERA in 2019 for the Phillies. And you know, if he finishes spring training with like numbers that are this good, obviously that doesn't like necessarily mean, okay, put him in the rotation, but it does mean, all right, he goes down to AAA, he keeps pitching well, then yeah, then you have another guy to go to if something happens, and something will happen. It's a long season and you don't have 5 healthy pitchers through 162 games. So yeah, I'm encouraged that Jojo Romero has had the kind of spring that has made you think that he's an option like that, because if Drew Anderson is too, then hey, this is a team that is not deep everywhere, especially starting pitching. Right now, I think this is an area of at least, let's say, focus at the moment, if you were looking at this team and ways you could improve it. Drew Anderson and Jojo Romero aren't going to be the answer to anything, except maybe the question, all right, like who's coming from Lehigh Valley to fill in tonight? But even just in that role, it's interesting to see that there could be some guys who want to step up and really want to make a statement this spring, especially with guys in the actual rotation that we're talking about, like Velasquez, like Eflin, who have to step up. And if for whatever reason they don't, hey, look, there might be somebody else sitting there waiting to take your job.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think the Phillies are going into this thinking that their AAA guys can do the job, can step in here and there. But the expectations are raised this year. This is not a season where you're just trying to see if the young guys can do it. You know, this is a season where you're expecting to be a World Series contender. And so I think it's okay to try these AAA guys out if Vince Velasquez needs to go on the shelf for a couple of weeks. But you also can't throw games away this season, and they know that. So we'll just kind of see how things play out here over the next couple of months. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about who we think is going to make the All-Star team from the Phillies and maybe give a potential surprise All-Star. I don't know if that's even possible with all the star power they have on this team right now. And is Gabe Kapler under more pressure this year with Bryce Harper here? We'll get into all that next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back with Hittin' Season. So, Justin, the Phillies went out and they got themselves a slew of All-Stars this offseason. Actually got themselves a couple of past MVPs in Bryce Harper and Andrew McCutchen. But JT Realmuto, obviously, coming to the fold as well. David Robertson. I don't know if David Robertson has ever made an All-Star team. I want to say that he has, but I'm going to have to look that up.
I think that he has.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that he has as well. But when we're talking about the All-Star game, we've had to rely on Pat Nashak being our lone All-Star representative a couple seasons ago. Aaron Nola was our lone representative last year, but at least that was a viable choice. Aaron Nola deserves to be at the All-Star game. But as we've talked about in past podcasts over the last couple of years, having a lone All-Star representative, while I think is still important, I like that baseball does make sure that at least one player from every team makes the All-Star game. It is kind of depressing, especially when it's like a relief pitcher who's only going to see one inning or may not even get in the game at all, a.k.a. Ricky Pitalico in 1996. And that's nothing against Ricky Pitalico, but nobody's nobody's rushing to their TV unless you're me. A poor, addled young man who is so Phillies obsessed and crazed, you just wanted to see the P on national TV. And I said, see the P on TV, not them P on TV.
The All-Star game used to be a little different in the 80s.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. You know, but I think the Phillies have a chance to have a number of representatives. You know, I think the most they've ever had is 6 in one season. I don't know that we'll get 6, but I certainly think that they could have 4 or 5 this year. So I'll ask you first, Who do you think makes the All-Star team? This is just a totally, you know, out of thin air question. Nobody, who knows how these guys are going to play. But who do you think makes the All-Star team for the Phillies this year?
I think we're looking at three pretty solid, let's say, guarantees that are All-Stars in Bryce Harper, I think, is a gimme. JT Realmuto, probably, assuming he puts up the kind of numbers he was putting up last year. And Aaron Nola, I think. Those are your three best bets to be Phillies All-Stars. And I think it's pretty likely that all three of them are. Then I think on the next tier, you're looking at guys like Gene Segura, like Odubel Herrera, guys like Segura, who also was an All-Star last year, I believe. David Robertson, All-Star in 2011, by the way. A guy like Odubel Herrera, who is also a past All-Star, but somebody who's got to work his way back to that level. And like I said, I think it's likely that he actually does that. So I think that's a possibility. I'm sorry, are we doing the sleeper All-Star picks here as well?
Yeah. Okay. And a sleeper All-Star pick as well. Yeah, and by the way, Segura, a two-time All-Star last year and in 2013. Yeah. You're right.
So if we're going sleeper, I think this is part of the theory that with the pressure off, that some of these guys can step up. I think that I'll just say Cesar Hernandez. I'm just going to put that out there because he's probably the least prominent member of this lineup. The Phillies are about to get a lot more national attention, I think. I think there's a chance we actually see the Cesar Hernandez profile that we have yet to see over the past couple of years, even though he's been with the team for so long. I think people are going to be looking for things to write about the Phillies, so we start learning a little bit more about them. And if Cesar Hernandez has any kind of success, I think he's going to be one of those guys that gets tapped for that. He's obviously been more of an on-base threat. He seems like he's going to be more of a bullet than a weapon for the Phillies. But if he does his job and does it any better than he had, or even just like puts up the numbers, I think having guys like Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto and Rhys Hoskins, like that block we're talking about, having guys like that in the lineup, guys like Gene Segura or Andrew McCutchen, who may be able to get this team the extra base hits it was missing and actually get runners in, they're going to make guys like Cesar Hernandez better. And I don't know. I wanted to look into this and didn't, but I mean, I think it's a matter of looking around the National League, which is, I would say, objectively better than the American League this year. There's just better players in the National League.
Yeah.
The National League teams did more to improve their teams, I think, in this offseason. So the competition in the NL, I think, is going to be a little hotter position by position. So it might come down to just who else are you competing with as a member of the Phillies, like at your position across the National League? Because, you know, Nolan Arenado is going to make third base kind of tough to compete with. Javier Baez is going to make second base a little tough for Cesar Hernandez. I don't think Cesar Hernandez is going to be a starting second baseman in the All-Star game, but if he hits his ceiling and he's an effective player, I think being on a team with better players is going to help him shine a little more as well. But league-wide, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for the Phillies, especially, you know, Freddie Freeman, first base, makes Rhys Hoskins' job a lot harder. Paul Goldschmidt, now at the Cardinals at first base, makes that job a lot harder. So, you know, it's going to be tough. But I'm going to say Cesar Hernandez just because he's the quietest member of this team, I think. But he stands to gain probably as much as some of these other guys who are lurking in the background.
Yeah, I wonder, you're right, totally, about the position being a major factor here. I mean, it's basically why Michael Franco never has a chance, because third base is just so stacked in the National League. But, you know, when you look at Paul Goldschmidt at first base, and you look at Freddie Freeman and some of the other players at first base, even if Rhys Hoskins has a great year, it will be really hard for him to get in at first base. Although, if you look at the latest odds that come down from Superbook in Las Vegas, they have Hoskins is the second best odds on the team to win the MVP. And so, again, I think that's going to be hard for him as a first baseman, who you're not going to get a lot of credit for your defense as a first baseman, and he doesn't do a lot running the bases. But if he's like a 45 homer guy, which he could hit 40 to 45 homers this year if hitting in that lineup, I think that's asking a lot. But, you know, he hits more than 30, being one of the most uneven and streaky hitters in baseball. If he can kind of even that out a little bit, he could be a 40 home run guy, and then you're really talking about something. I agree with you. I think Bryce Harper, I think JT Realmuto, I think Aaron Nola are almost locks. I think somebody from their bullpen goes, whether it's David Robertson or Sir Anthony Dominguez might go. And if I'm looking at a sleeper, you know, if I really believe in the Nick Pivetta breakout like I do, I think Pivetta could be. I think Pivetta could absolutely be an all-star this year. If he has, you know, we've seen guys have, even if it's just a great first half, we've seen guys like Tyler Green and Paul Byrd get to the all-star game. Just depends on kind of what some of the other pitchers in the league are doing. And if Nick Pivetta is having a good season to a very good season, I absolutely could see him getting named to the All-Star team this year. And that would probably be my sleeper. Although I love your Cesar Hernandez pick because I think a couple of years ago, he could have gone to the All-Star game if he hadn't gotten, I think it was he got injured or something happened. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he was kind of on that path. You know, he was, and second base, again, is not, there is Javier Baez there, but there's not a whole lot after Javi Baez. It's second base
Scooter
is not loaded.
Gennett, I think, in Cincinnati.
Scooter Gennett. Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. He's definitely a threat to that position, but I don't know. I kind of put Cesar on that level. I mean, Jeanette, man, he put up some crazy numbers in the first half last season. He came back down to earth in the second half. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. This is Cesar could it was both in 2016 and 2017. He hit 294 both years. Like that's some consistency and the kind you want to see, honestly, because last year was a team where this team really could have used a 300 hitter somewhere. And Cesar was one of the closest ones in 2017 and 2016. Last year, he sank quite a bit. But yeah, I think the NL second base market could let Cesar sneak in as a bench role. But, you know, I think we'll be pleased to see more than one guy there, and I think the Phillies have their best chance in probably a couple of decades at seeing more than one Phillies player at the All-Star game.
Yeah, and you'll probably have two starters. You'll probably have Harper and Realmuto as your starters, which they haven't had a starter in quite some time. I imagine I have to look that up. I think Chase Utley is probably, or maybe it was Carlos. No, Carlos Ruiz never started an All-Star game. Probably Chase Utley is the last Phillies player to start an All-Star game, but I'll have to look that up. And folks listening to the podcast, if you figure out the answer before we get resolution on that, then you will let us know on the Twitter machine. Last thing before we wrap up here, Justin, Bryce Harper coming to the Phillies was obviously great news for everybody. Now, obviously, Gabe Kapler, the manager, was as excited as anyone because you have one of the premier guys on your team. Obviously, I think we were talking all offseason about Harper and Kapler kind of hitting it off at their meeting when the first time the Phillies all went to Vegas to meet with Harper and Scott Boras and all that. But I think that there is also another side to this. The expectations have undoubtedly been raised on the Phillies now. And you wonder if that means that if this team gets off to a slow start, is Gabe Kapler, is there more pressure on him this year? He was already a guy that had a lot of pressure on him coming into the season after the collapse last year and some of the stuff that's happened during the offseason. You wonder if having Harper here, raising the expectations, raising the stakes, adds more pressure on him. I think it does, Justin, but what do you think? Do you think Gabe Kapler is under more pressure than he would have been if they hadn't signed Bryce Harper, or is it not much difference?
Absolutely. I mean, in his first season, Gabe Kapler had to try and make it work, even though he, you know, it was his own doing a couple of times that lost the Phillies games. However, he was part of the philosophy the Phillies were trying to build last year, which was an offense based a lot on walking and a lot on homering, and the Phillies weren't doing enough of scoring runs. He did a lot of tinkering with the bullpen. I just think in his short time here, Gabe Kapler hasn't had the best time. Like we've been excited. We were excited about the Phillies last year. There was some low key excitement when the year started. And then when they jumped to the top of the division and were in first place for a decent chunk of the year, you know, that was great too. But he had his little tomfoolery at the beginning of the season, the complete screw ups that were nationally recognized as like what is going on in Philadelphia. He got stuff under control, and you know there's been a couple of clubhouse hiccups that he's stifled pretty much immediately. But you know then they had one of the worst collapses in team history down the stretch. He further irritated people with the relentless positivity, which whether you saw that as a bad thing or a good thing, you know, it's still it's undeniable that he was talked to about that by Andy McPhail, like that was something that they wanted to address going into 2019. And then, of course, we had the story come out this winter about his involvement in the player assault situation when he was the director of player development for the Dodgers. That wasn't great for him, even just reputationally. He hasn't had the greatest optics so far as the Phillies manager, which can be, I don't know, it seems like that's just been blurred over to an extent. Like, it's not hard to find a debate about Gabe Kapler, especially when you just want to lump it into analytics versus traditional blah, blah, blah. Like that's a very easy argument to have in Philadelphia right now. But at this point, the Phillies kind of switched out their entire, like to an extent, their team. They're a different team now. They're going to be different expectations. There's going to be, I mean, we're talking about an offensive block in the middle of the lineup that's going to be there to knock in runs and score runs, as opposed to last year where it was about like, all right, where can we steal runs? Like, let's get more base runners. I think there's been something of a philosophical, not shift, but an adjustment. And they've imported this brand new team with multiple superstars. And we're talking about them sending three, four, five guys to the All-Star game. If you can't win with this team, then I think the problem gets shifted to, yeah, all right, the problem seems like it might be you, Gabe Kapler, like the manager. I think that's only fair. Yeah, we're pretty early into Gabe Kapler's tenure as a manager, but it's been a bit of a bumpy ride so far. And the Phillies have outfitted him with the best Phillies team we've seen in probably a decade. If you can't win with this team, if you can't at least get to the playoffs, I mean, that's the other thing. It depends on how short we're talking about him falling. If he doesn't get to the playoffs, this is not a guy who should be, I think, comfortable with his job security, because he probably shouldn't have that much. This is going to be a good team. This should be a good team. And barring some epic letdowns from the guys they've signed and acquired, then you got to know how to win with these guys. It shouldn't be that hard. Charlie Manuel, the last manager who won a World Series in Philadelphia, pretty much just let his very good players be comfortable and gave them a clubhouse in which they felt okay enough to be themselves and just be the high ceiling elite players that they were. Let the role players step up and just, you know, he was a player's manager. That's what that does. He wasn't the best bullpen manager, but he sort of relinquished that duty to at least 1 year to Jimmy Williams. And then he pretty much let Rich Doobie run the show at that point. So he kind of knew where his strengths were and leaned into him. And one of them was just letting guys be themselves. And that's why all his players love him. Gabe Kapler, you haven't heard as much love from his players about. I'm not saying that there's any particular issue with that, but you just haven't. You haven't heard them gush over how much they love their manager and what he's done. Gabe Kapler's a guy who's very focused on culture, on what his players are thinking and how they're thinking. Which when you hear him talk about it, that sounds like, oh, that's all good stuff. He's worried about diet. He's worried about nutrition. He's worried about headspace, mindset. He's worried about all these. Okay, that's great. But if you have a clubhouse full of guys who aren't comfortable with that, who disagree, who get in a slump and can't get out of it, then it becomes about the manager who's so focused on culture. You couldn't give them the culture they needed to win. And guess what? This is a team with Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, Rhys Hoskins, Andrew McCutchen, Gene Segura. I mean, this is a team that should win. This is a team that shouldn't have a hard time winning. And if they do, the first place people are going to look is Gabe Kapler's office.
Right. And it's all how they lose, if they lose, if they get off to a slow start. If they're dealt with a bunch of injuries, you can't hold that against the manager necessarily. And you know, it's people are going to, if they start off like, you know, 15-20 or something like that, and they just haven't had their team together, they've lost bullpen guys or whatever, you know, the manager gets a pass for that. And I give Kapler a lot of credit for, I think he has tried to communicate well with his players, something Ryan Sandberg had a really hard time doing. But I do think he had to learn a lot last year with how to communicate with players, knowing which players like to be communicated with via text, which players needed a one-on-one in his office. You know, I think he had to learn last year not to overmanage. He's admitted as much that he overmanaged early in the season with removing Aaron Nola early in the season
right.
opener.
And that's what I was going to say, honestly, is that I don't think we're going to see stuff like taking Nola out early in the season opener, like the Hobby Milner incident. I don't think we're going to see stuff on that level this year. I think he's got to be really careful about overmanaging and how many, you know, how many times he's going to be like, well, the matchup said that, but I do think the bigger hiccups, that part should be over, because like you said, he was a rookie last year too. He had some right. learning to do. It turned out he had a little more learning to do than I assumed that he knew how to call up right. a pitcher in
well,
two games.
That's what happens when you. But that's what happens when you hire a manager who's never managed on any level at all. That's not like he was just like a major league rookie manager. He was a rookie manager yeah. as far as managing goes.
Sure, and I think those are the kind of mistakes we'll see less of moving forward. And that's going to be in and against his favor. Like, all right, you've got a year under your belt too. You've got some more experience, and again, we've brought in players who should make it easier to manage, because your job is like, okay, get out there, and not, okay, what do you need to want to get out there? You know, like, yeah. to yeah. understand why you're out there.
Yep.
So I think the Phillies have made his job a little easier. And if he should, I am expecting to see some development on his front, as far as he's already said he's going to be holding players more accountable. He's going to have an adjusted mindset moving forward. So I do expect to see some progress from him, but I think I stand by the idea that if this team is losing and it's not because of injuries and it's not because of bad luck, then that obviously the first place they're going to look is leadership.
I agree 100% with that, you know, and they could still win 90 games and not make the playoffs. That's how loaded the National League East and the National League is this year. But I don't think that's probable. And if they can get to that 89, 90, 91 win plateau, then I would think that the team has done their job. But again, it's all how you get there. As we saw last year, we would have taken 80 and 82 last season if we had thought, okay, they kind of treaded water most of the season and finished 80 and 82. We'll take that. It's how they got to that 80 and 82 win season, that 80 and 82 record that really was the big difference. So it is kind of how you navigate through the season. I did think it was interesting something Bryce Harper said. I think this was after the game on Saturday, talking about Gabe Kapler. He was asked what it's like to play under Kapler, and he said, when we faced him last year in September and they had like 45 guys or whatever they had in the clubhouse, switch this guy, switch that guy, and our game was like 5.5 hours. So it was kind of tough to be able to go, oh yeah, I like this guy. But no, he's great. Being able to talk to him, sit down with him, get to know him on a personal level, he really cares. He's genuine about what he does. He works hard. He's passionate, and that's somebody you want at the helm. He's somebody that really works hard each and every day. When he looks better than half your team also with a shirt off, it makes you want to work hard too. He's a great manager, and I look forward to learning from him and picking his brain more here and there, just playing for him. And look, we don't know. You know, we heard whispers during the course of the offseason, and I don't think they were valid about Bryce Harper not wanting to play for Gabe Kapler and free agents staying away because of Gabe Kapler. Obviously, that wasn't the case. David Robertson, Andrew McCutchen, and Bryce Harper all signed with the Phillies. You can say, yeah, the Phillies gave them more money than anybody else, but that doesn't always mean anything. Everything, you know. I mean, I don't think Bryce Harper would have gone to a team if he really hated the manager. You know, it doesn't seem like that was part. He was really considering some of the aspects aside from money in making this decision. Although at the end of the day, it ultimately came down to the team willing to give him the most money. So, but
agree. And yeah. I think that that getting to talk about Gabe Kapler was just another chance for Bryce Harper to show how media trained and savvy he is. Like, that's a pretty solid answer. Yeah. At the same time, I mean, it's not hard. This city is not going to wait long to blame Kapler for something. You have people who are very wary and uneasy about him following the outing of that story from Los Angeles, from his player director. Then you have the other side of it, people who have never liked him because of analytics. And yeah. they don't like that vein that he brings to managing, and they feel relies on too much. It won't take much for him to, in someone's eyes, be doing something wrong. And, you know, hey, look, John Middleton said an internet poll helped him dictate which superstar free agent the Phillies brought in. So if the fans are that much of a factor in the decisions that ownership makes, then Gabe Kapler may not be, you know, we've seen some stretches where Gabe Kapler's job may not be long for this world if the fans were deciding what exactly went on. But yeah, that being said, it's crazy to think Bryce Harper would come somewhere where he had so much reservations about the manager that he would factor them into a career decision like this. However, yeah, the pressure's on, man. This team is outfitted to win, and the pressure's on everybody.
Yep.
Gabe Kapler included, and probably especially.
All right, Justin, well, listen, we're going to wrap up episode number 266 here. Any final thoughts before we wrap up this week?
Yeah, one thing we didn't get to tonight that we had potentially planned to talk about was comparing Rhys Hoskins to Pat Burrell and deciding whether we'd be satisfied with Rhys Hoskins' career if he had a Pat Burrell type of career.
Yeah.
On the surface, I would say absolutely. If Rhys Hoskins ended his career and at some point, again, with Pat Burrell, we tempered our expectations and realized this guy wasn't going to be the guy. He was going to be a guy, just not the guy. And if Rhys Hoskins finished his career hitting like 250, 260 most seasons, but good for 20, 30 home runs, maybe 40 when he had an even better year. That'd be great, especially if he's surrounded by like the kind of talent the Phillies have right now. Somebody who's good enough for that much power and that much run production would be a terrific asset to have on this team for a bunch of years. That being said, I think it's comical because I don't think we could have picked two guys who were on opposite ends of the wholesomeness scale. When you think about Pat Burrell leaving this city was probably damaging to the local economy in Old City, as like the Irish pub and all the places that used to hang out and dance on the bar. Then you have Rhys Hoskins, who I think was like grown in a lab by the most wholesome scientists in America. I think I said earlier this offseason that he was grown to be the perfect teammate because that's just what he is. It's comical to think of those two guys filling the same role because it's very difficult to picture an Instagram video of Rhys Hoskins flying shirtless down a slip and slide with a drink in his hand.
No doubt about it. And I'm looking at Pat Burrell's numbers in Philadelphia for his career. He hit .257, .367, .485, had a career .852 OPS, OPS plus of .119. And his average season, 145 games, 28 home runs, 92 RBIs. Per 162 would have been 32 homers, 103 RBIs. So not bad. Again, just not the world-beating seasons that we thought. But Pat Burrell had a 4.6 win season in there, a 3.6 win season. So I would be satisfied with a Pat Burrell-like career for Rhys Hoskins, although I think Hoskins has more talent than Burrell does. And just to answer my question earlier about the last Philly to start an All-Star game, I believe it was 2014 with Chase Utley was the last Philly to start an All-Star game wearing a Phillies uniform. I think that's right. So my final thought, Justin, I don't know if you've been keeping up to date on the drama surrounding Jose Canseco and Alex Rodriguez. Have you been following this on Twitter at all here on Sunday night as we record this?
I got to tell you, I'm on the outside of this one. I need you, my gossipiest friend, to give me the hot goss.
You know me. I'm all TMZ'd out every day, but this came down tonight. Jose Canseco is tweeting at Alex Rodriguez. He said, "Watching World of Dance, watching J-Lo text Alex Rodriguez, little does she know that he is cheating on her with my ex-wife Jessica. Poor girl, she has no idea who he really is." And then in another tweet says, "I was there a few months back with her when he called her on her phone." Another tweet says, "Alex Rodriguez, I challenge you to a boxing match or an MMA match anytime you want." And then in a follow-up, it says, "At J-Lo, if you want the truth about Alex Rodriguez, call me 702-374-3735.
Well,
so who would win in a match between Jose Canseco and A-Rod? That's what I want to know.
I think Jose's
not well.
I mean, putting his note, how many? Oh man, wow. Yeah, no, I had not heard that was happening. And boy, I feel like what's the show J-Lo's on? I'm sorry,
it's a dancing show. I don't know. Yeah, something like that.
Ratings gonna go through the roof thanks to that Jose Canseco bump. My god, They always do. He is a media machine. So savvy. Tweeting his phone number out. Pro move.
Man, I mean, why? He's going to get so many crank phone calls. I mean, did he think he was direct messaging her? It's just, he has gone off the deep, and he was already wading in the deep. He's actually drowning in the deep.
Waiting.
I hope he's
waiting in the deep.
Yeah. Waiting in the deep. He's just not a well man. Anyway. All right, well, that'll do it for episode number 266 of Hit and Season. Again, folks, if you haven't done so, subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed where you will get Hit and Season. You'll get Justin's show that he does with Liz Rocher, Continued Success, and you'll get Justin's other podcast, The Dirty Inning, that he does with Dr. Trevor Strunk. They did a great show last week looking at a game from 1930 about a World War II air balloonist who managed to survive the war and play baseball for the Phillies. And I'm not so sure that was the ending that he would have liked. But it was a great episode, Justin, that you guys did, and looking forward to the next one. If you have a friend who doesn't know about the Good Fight podcast feed, they like the Phillies but don't know about podcasts, subscribe for them and leave a rating and a review while you're at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. That will help us out a great deal. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.